Thank you for listening to the Finally Quit Porn podcast. My name is Thomas Molyneux and I am here to share my own journey of quitting porn and a lot of tips, advice, stories and really interesting guests who have their own perspectives on how to quit porn for good. If you would like further support, go and check out thomasmolyneux.com where you can find more resources. So thanks a lot for listening. Let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Finally Quit Porn podcast. Today I am joined by Mary Paulus, who has many insights on addiction and compulsive behaviour. Thank you for joining us, Mary. Do you want to start off by sharing a little bit about yourself and how you got into the work that you're doing today?
Sure. Yeah, I've been working with compulsive and addictive behaviors. My business is called Beyond Compulsion. And I've been doing it for over 30 years. And I started the work back when with nicotine addiction. I was a smoker and I basically tried everything I could to stop smoking. I started when I was very young, teenager, and then knew it was a bad idea to be smoking. Tried to stop for like, I don't know, 14 years, 15 years before I found my mentor and did her class and was able to successfully stop smoking. And I've been doing this work ever since, but I've expanded it from nicotine addiction to any compulsive and addictive behaviors, because the methodology just, it really plugs into any compulsion, which basically a compulsion is basically something that you want to do, you feel compelled to do, but you know it's a bad idea, but you do it anyway. So it just fits so perfectly with all compulsions, and it's so effective that I basically became Beyond Compulsion rather than just working strictly with nicotine addicts. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how long would you say you were addicted to nicotine for?
About 15 years. Yep. It was, it's one of the really underestimated addictions. You know, it's so trivialized. And now we have vaping, you know, people are vaping. Are they vaping over there in the UK?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Everywhere.
It's crazy. And you know, the thing is they can hide it a lot easier too, you know, because it's not, I mean, it just vaporizes, obviously, duh. But I think people don't consider, like, with their families and their pets and their kids, like that vapor, I mean, it falls to the ground. And it's like, yeah, there's your pets, then they're licking their fur, their babies crawling around or whatever. Stuff is bad news. But and we also have the pouches, the little like salt, rock salt thing that they put in. And the other thing is people are getting a lot of nicotine off the vaping and off the pouches, you know, more than they're getting off smoking. So, and they actually want to treat smokers with vaping, like, duh, you're just administering the same drug a different way. So it's all the same addiction. So, yeah.
And what was the impact for you when you were addicted?
What was the impact?
Yeah.
Meaning, like,
how did that impact your life?
The negative consequences were, I mean, it's just so obvious. It's just bad news. But I think the biggest thing, I mean, physically, it's bad news. I think the biggest thing is like this monkey on your back, you know, it's like you're so controlled by it. You're always thinking about it. Always thinking when you're going to get your fix. It's like you can't have any kind of spontaneous life. You know, I mean, someone asks you, oh, you want to go to the coast for the weekend? And it's like, well, am I going to be able to smoke there? You know, I mean, all that kind of bullshit that you run through your mind. It's just such a monkey on your back. It's so controlling. You know, that was probably the biggest thing for me. I started to have like a little shortness of breath. And I mean, I knew it was bad, but mentally, I think was the biggest piece for me. Yeah.
And then you went and got some support from a mentor.
Well, I actually, my mentor, she ran an ad in the paper when people used to run ads in the local paper, right? And it was a Dear Smoker ad. And I read that ad for 2 years. And she was just speaking to, you know, smokers. And then I went into her class and it was like, oh, finally, something that actually makes sense to me, you know, because I did hypnosis. I did all that kind of stuff. And and their replacements, you know, which is again administering nicotine in another way, chewing gum or patches or whatever. So yeah, it was so smart, you know. It was like, okay, yes, this makes perfect sense to me. And then probably a month after I stopped or something, she was having TV people come into a follow-up class. So she called me and she said, hey, I'm trying to get people in, you know, fill up the class for follow-up for this TV thing. Would you mind coming in? And I said, yeah, went in. And then and then she called me after that and she's like, do you like your job? And I'm like, oh, I love my job, you know? And I thought about it for a week and I called her back. I'm like, I hate my job. And so then I went to work for her and then I've been doing this work ever since. So yeah. Yep. Yep. So, wow. But then I, when she had to move to Florida because her sister was sick and I was doing nicotine addiction work exclusively here, but then I switched it over to food compulsion when I was working with her exclusively with nicotine addiction, but then I couldn't compete with her here. So I switched to food compulsion, which was a crazy move. It's since I started doing work with food compulsion, it's really spiraled out of control. I know you guys have obesity pushing 30% over there now. And everyone's looking at it as a physical problem, right? And no one's taking care of the addiction component of food, you know, addiction. It's completely misunderstood. It's the bane of my existence. And the normalizing of food compulsion is, or a food addiction is, it's kind of obscene to me, like how many people just are on board with it and thinking like this is just a body type. And when I was in high school, there was one obese girl, you know. Now it's and the kids are getting it really bad. But you know, but to get to porn addiction, you know, which is want to help your listeners, like food, porn addiction or sex addiction, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's one of these addictions that requires engaging. I mean, unless you want to abstain completely, you want to become a priest or something, you know, we know how well it's working for them, right? Abstaining from sex. Sorry, I shouldn't say things like that. But one of the addictions that you have to engage in, you know, so it's not like you're an opiate addict or a nicotine addict where you can just stop completely, you know, so that's where it gets to be a little bit more tricky because you need to engage in, you don't necessarily have to do porn, but you're going to have sex. Everybody wants to have sex, almost everybody. I mean, there are some asexuals, but you want to, and then you have to engage in it. And this thing that potentially gets very compelling. And then you want to do it all the time to the point that it's really messing up your life and really controlling you. So that's kind of what you're looking at, you know. It's like, how do you find that balance? And that's where, I mean, there's a lot to it. I have a 9 video series where I teach people. I mean, it's very in depth, teaching people how to deal with these compulsions, you know. So there's a lot of helplessness out there, and I get people into a place of knowing where reasonable engagement at reasonable times, and that people actually know what that is, you know, when it's as opposed to just trying to abstain from it completely or try not to think about it seems real popular. So what's your experience been lately? I know you said on that last podcast or a couple podcasts ago that you were having a struggle again.
Yeah. So I was doing great for quite a lot of months, probably 4 or 5 months, no masturbation at all, no sexual content at all. Had some sex in that time after I had done the first 3 months.
With other people, you mean? With actual people.
I had actually abstained for over 3 months though initially, because I'd kind of made a commitment to myself that I don't need sex, I don't need masturbation, I don't need any of that at all for a little time. So I took a step away entirely for a little while, and then maybe 4 or 5 months ago fell back into that habit. Now what happens with porn addiction though is that our brain is very, very sensitive to certain cues when you have like a bit of an addiction. And so you look at it once, it's very, very hard to then not look at it again, because the cues become super, super sensitive. Now, obviously, orgasm is like one of the greatest evolutionary rewards. It's up there because, you know, it's similar with food in that sense. You know, food, sex, they're like two of the biggest natural rewards you can possibly get. And then heroin and things like that kind of hit the same parts of the reward circuitry, and so that's why they become addictive. But anyway, so yeah, I ended up looking at it again, and then it's been quite difficult to kind of get myself out of that cycle, you know, looking at sexual content maybe once every few weeks, not often and not for that longer period of time, and I don't really think about it much anymore, which is great because I'm too focused on my goals, which is a lot better, and I meditate a lot and have other healthy habits. But yeah, it's certainly something I'd still want to reduce even further. There's no doubt about it. So yeah, what would be your like approach then if you were to help somebody like myself overcome this problem?
Well, it's interesting that you say that it was 3 months that you abstained completely, and then you had sex with other people, right? Not went to the porn.
Yeah,
because
that's right, yeah.
3 months is the highest relapse time for all addictions, when you start to forget the negative consequences. So I think the main difference with what I do is I teach people how to think about it intentionally. I mean, I don't want to use like the word intentionally on purpose, you know, intentionally so buzzy right now, or with intention or authentic and all these kind of buzzy words. But rather than trying not to think about it, which is kind of the main approach, there's trying not to think about it, where you're going to go do something else, keep busy. And I heard you say that in your podcast about kind of keeping busy, hanging out with family, but they want to do TV and food, and all this idea of have your life be more fulfilling. Exercise, eat healthy, do something else, right? Rather than deal directly with the compelling desire to use the porn. And that's what I do. But now, easier said than done, because when you have that desire, of course, you're going to want to try to get rid of it, because you know, if you act on it, oh my God, now I'm back in the cycle. Here I am, you know. But if you're honest with yourself, you know that that's not taking care of it, you know, trying not to think about it, because junky thinking, that's what I call it. Junky thinking is incredibly persistent and it refuses to be ignored. Now you can try to substitute healthy behaviors and that might work for a little while, but until you get directly at that compulsive desire, that neural pathway. And neural pathways kind of buzzy right now too, but neural pathways, when you can change them, and it's incredibly powerful, because like I say all over my stuff, permanent mental freedom is possible. And permanent mental freedom is possible by changing the neural pathways. But one of the main things that I teach, and it takes a whole entire class to do it, is how to be able to stay. And one of the things you said was identify the thoughts, right? Or like label the feelings. But I think it's the being able to go, okay, this is my compelling desire to use porn, right? Here it is, I'm having it. And what I can teach you is how to be able to stay with that desire long enough so that you can think it all the way through. I teach a 7-fact script, and to be able to, but you have to be able to get in that initial pathway and stay in it long enough to think it all the way through in order to make the choice. And then you don't have to act on it. and not acting on it is what ultimately is going to make it go away. But all of that is not going to happen when you just try to go think about something else. And while meditation is a really, really awesome practice, that's again, clearing your mind, right? Where I'm going to go the other direction. I mean, meditate like crazy. It's a wonderful practice, but not for treating addiction. Okay. Because it clears the mind versus being able to very intentionally connect to the compulsive desire. And the other thing very popular, which I know you're using both, is journaling. Now, journaling is another incredibly awesome practice, but for dealing with addiction, the problem comes, the addictive part of the mind takes the pen. And if you don't know how to talk very specifically back to that junky thinking to change those neural pathways, you know, the addictive part of your mind is every bit as smart as you are, Tom. Do you go by Tom or Thomas?
Yeah,
Tom. Tom, yeah. It's every bit as smart as you are, and it'll outsmart you until you learn how to outsmart it. And that's what I teach. So yeah. And yeah. It's and the other thing that I, you know, just the notes I took and I listened to another lady on your podcast, everybody's talking about trauma. Deal with your trauma, deal with your trauma, deal with. Yes, please, people, deal with your trauma. Yes. But dealing with trauma is not going to alleviate the addictive desire. Because you've dealt with your trauma, it's great to understand that trauma. It's great to process those emotions. But until you deal absolutely 100% directly with the compulsive desire to act, you know, in act out in your porn or whatever it's going to be, that's going to remain, that desire is going to remain intact. Dealing with your trauma is not going to stop the desire. Does that make sense?
Yes, all of that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for sharing that, because I think it really, really helps me bridge a lot of the ideas I've been having together. Because essentially where I'm at with it all is that you have, yeah, these neural pathways, I think you're spot on. They're really, really strong. They're really strong. Yeah. And it's that habit loop of cue, craving, response, reward. And when you have a cue, that will elicit this craving, which is super intense, and that's the neural pathway. And so you do something before, then it creates this response again in the future, and then the brain rewires, and then it becomes almost automatic, and it's really compulsive. Now the thing with meditation for me is it's not just about clearing my thoughts. For me, meditation is about sitting with feeling sensations, and within meditation what will sometimes come up is that desire, or it will be feelings of shame, stress, anxiety. And the stuff on trauma, I believe, is really important, but it's not the whole thing. Because the thing with trauma is that I think that is the cue that then creates the craving. And so it is very, very much related to the neural pathway. But the thing I think I've been missing out on getting across in my content, which you've really, really helped me with, is that it's not always going to be the trauma. Sometimes it will just be a different kind of cue. You know, the cues can be all kinds of things. The trauma is one of them. The other thing could be you're sitting in a meeting like I was today. And I literally had urges today, right? Because I went onto this online course, awesome course, and it's me and seven other women. And one of the women was my age, very, very attractive. And I would be lying if I didn't say that triggered me a little bit, because I'm in a meeting with her for 7 or 8 hours. If my brain sees an attractive girl on a screen, straight away it's like, oh, craving, you know, it's almost automatic. And so I did experience cravings. I went home and I sat down and I meditated for a few minutes, and I kind of sat with the feelings, and then I realized I was super tired, really overwhelmed, stressed out. I had these intense cravings, and I had a nap for an hour, and then I went to my meditation center, and now I'm coming and having a chat with you. So that's been my evening. Now, I think within that evening, if I didn't have the Buddhist center, I probably would have had to do more processing of that craving. And so that's what I'm keen to ask you about now. So how do you sit with that craving so that you can just let it, you know, let yourself experience it and rewire the brain? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, that's a big question, because, you know, like I say, like, people think, Well, try to avoid the triggers, right? Well, triggers are, every trigger is an opportunity. My clients used to call them another fucking opportunity, but it's
But don't go triggering yourself. Just going to put that out there for the audience, because I know how this addiction works. And what I would do in the past is go, right, this is what happened on my last setback. Is I was like, right, I'm going to trigger myself so that I can overcome the trigger. And therefore, I'll feel like all this sexual mastery and I'll weaken the addiction. And then what I ended up doing is that was just the addictive brain speaking. And then I obviously ended up going and relapsing. So anyway,
of course, right? So that's what I'm saying. People want to avoid the triggers, but because it's a natural instinct. You think, oh my God, if I don't find a way to not think about this, I'm going to do it. When that's, you know, you're going to do it anyway. Eventually you're going to do it anyway. So, you know, in order to stay with the desire, like I said, that's a whole entire class that I don't think I can go into, you know, just right on the podcast, because there's so much to it. And especially if we're limited for time, I mean, it's kind of the foundation of my program, is how to be able to stay with that desire long enough. Because when you're able to do that, then the rest of the steps, that's actually facts one and two of the script, then you actually can go through the entire script and be able to make that choice consistently until it changes. And the thing is with these addictions that you need to engage in, you know, the food, the porn, what, you know, sex, whatever, relationships, you know, are another one that are really prone to compulsion. All the talk of narcissism and all this stuff lately, people being stuck in these relationships, there's a very complex piece where, you know, the addictive part of the mind, it tries to convince you, you'd think it would say, oh yeah, just go ahead and do it. You deserve it. All this, you deserve it crap. I'm just like so completely over it. I don't know if you have it over there with food and all that. You deserve it.
yeah, sometimes.
Everyone's like,
self-care is like being commercialized into something just to sell some more stuff, which doesn't
addiction.
Make any sense.
Yeah, right. So, but the addictive part of the mind, while you'd think the addictive part of the mind would be encouraging you, what it's going to do is it's going to say, no, Tom, you stay away from that computer. You can't do that because that's compulsive. And then you need to stop doing this, which is going to create all these feelings of deprivation. You're going to be like, oh my God, oh my God. And then it becomes about the feelings of deprivation. Now you forget everything else because now you just want to get out of these feelings, right? Mm. And the only way you know how at that point is you're going to go to the porn.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I teach people how to avoid the feelings of deprivation. And like I say, I can't get into the very specifics of the script because it's my intellectual property, you know? So I'd be happy to share it with you at some point, but there's too much to it. I mean, it's a couple of, you know, half hour videos that to teach that aspect of, to be able to get into the correct neural pathway and then not bust out of the feelings of deprivation so that you can be in a calm space to be able to really look at the reality of your situation based on the choice that you're going to make going forward. If you're going to engage in the behavior, if you're not going to engage in the behavior. So it's pretty complicated. And the other thing is, most people are going to just try to reach for something else. And you said it yourself, it's the healthy behaviors, get in a healthy lifestyle, make sure to exercise, do this, do that, do this, do that. And right now with the normalizing of food compulsion being as obscene as it is, it's just, you can read, I've got an article on my website, beyondcompulsion.com. There's an article there, it's called I Brought Sad Food, which you might be interested in. And basically, people are, they're going to reach for food. You know, if you just try to white knuckle your addiction, your addictive desire, and you don't know very specifically how to deal with that with my seven fact script, most people are going to reach for food. and they think, oh, I'll just stop before it gets out of control. Well, you know, 200 pounds later, because, you know, there's people out there that are trying to deal with, you know, opiate addiction with cookies. You know, it's just like, how many cookies do you think you're going to eat till you get the opiate? Well, you get an opiate effect from compulsive eating, but, you know, it's so touted, and it's so, you deserve it, all that, you reward yourself, all this crap, you know. So people are just spinning out in their addictions, going from one to another to another to another.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
They don't know what else to do.
I mean, I remember towards the latter end of that 4 or 5 months spell without any porn or any sex or anything, I certainly developed some kind of food addiction in that time. You know, towards the later.
Oh, no, don't do it.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy. It's the worst. I'll send you my book. Yeah, Beyond Food Compulsion. Because the thing is people so grossly underestimate the negative consequences of food compulsion. You know, I mean, it's like, it's so ridiculous. They grossly underestimate it. People are dropping like flies and living miserably because of obesity, you know. And well, what about, you know, have you read about Matthew Perry, Friends, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Well, they just found ketamine in his system.
Yeah.
And Suboxone, which is all these, you know, these pharmaceutical treatments for addiction. His problem, treatment resistant depression, they call it. Well, the reason they give him some massively addictive drug, ketamine or whatever. The reason he's so damn depressed is because he had this addiction his whole entire life and could never find an effective way to deal with it. He spent like $6 million, whatever, on addiction and his addiction treatment. Mm-hmm. Went to rehab like an insane amount of times, detoxed like 60 times. He went back and forth from NA, Narcotics Anonymous, to Alcoholics Anonymous. He went to 6,000 meetings. You can encourage somebody to, like, okay, you want to recover from an addiction? Well, you only have to go to 6,000 meetings. I'm like, are you kidding? 6,000 meetings, and he's still miserable. And you know what he did? He had an interview with Diane Sawyer. And at the very end, he said, oh, well, now I'm going to go home and have some toffee pudding, because this was a stressful interview. So now, and they laughed, ha ha. And now he's dead, you know, with ketamine, Suboxone in his system. And he, you see his big belly, and now he's eating. He quit smoking somewhere in there. You know, I've had clients, food compulsives, that have strokes, heart attacks, you know.
Yeah, I think if, like, you really deep it and you look at it all, you kind of just think, right, maybe capitalism and, like, the Western world actually lives on addiction. And I think it does. I don't know if you've read
now.
There's a really, really good book that I read a few months back, which I think you would really like. It's called Ultra Processed People. So interesting. It's by a British scientist. He's gone to a really good university here. And he talks about all of the different chemicals that go into food and, like, you know, the preservatives, and how that actually regulates the hormones, and it creates even more craving, and how there's so little talk about all of this, because about 50 or 60% of food nowadays is full of this stuff that people don't even know what's in it. Like, you look at the ingredient list and you're like, what on earth is glutamine, or I don't know, whatever it is. And it's like, this is so addictive. I don't know if glutamine was the right word, but yeah, like, there's so many different weird things in food, and it's so messed up. And anyway, we should probably wrap it up soon, because I know we don't have long. But
one thing on that is we don't know where it started, you know, where obesity epidemic started, but the one thing we got to get away from is that people are helpless in the face of it, of any addiction, right? You know, it's like, because that's where, you know, giving them Suboxone to the opiate addict. Well, they got to have something. They got to have something. No, what they got to have, Tom, is an effective way to deal with addiction. That's what I provide. So, you know, go figure. It's a rough addiction world out there, and it's getting worse all the time. So
yeah,
I'm glad that we got to have a conversation about it.
Yeah, me too. And where can people find you?
They can find me at beyondcompulsion.com, and there's a contact there. I also, Beyond Compulsion has a YouTube where they can see my just videos. I made a bunch of videos on my just trying to like educate. And then of course I'm going to have my podcast will be relaunched soon. Help Is Here, Permanent Mental Freedom from Addiction. It's already up with old episodes from Wait What, when I was focusing more on food compulsion, just for the podcast, not in my work. But yeah, and you know what? I feel like with people, you know, just call me 503-502-9340. Call me, text me. I know it's hard to kind of open that door. And I think if people can just send a text and maybe, you know, they'll be a little more comfortable, you know, maybe even sort of anonymously at first, because a lot of times people think, if I make contact with this person, especially with my high success rate, that means I have to stop my addiction. And then they freak out and, you know, don't follow through because they get into feelings of deprivation right away. So, but I would be happy to also just talk with you, not on tape, if you want. That'd be great.
And yeah, sure. Sounds good. Okay. We'll wrap it up there then. I hope this podcast has been useful to anyone listening. Go and check Mary out at beyondcompulsion.com or drop her a text. And yeah, thanks a lot for listening. And I hope you have an amazing rest of your day.